Good morning. I invite you now to sit in an upright and dignified posture with your spine straight and feel both feet on the floor now. Just feel your feet gently resting on the floor. You may close your eyes if you wish, or just allow your gaze to rest gently in front of you. And now, visualize a mountain. This could be one of the lovely mountains we have here, or a mountain you remember, or just a mountain from your imagination. It could be a single mountain, alone, like a volcano, or part of a huge mountain range. When this mountain changes, as all things do, it changes very, very slowly in geologic time. Imagine your body now becoming like the mountain, grounded, solid, still. Be like the mountain. Be centered. Be present. Be present now. Be deeply grounded. Visualize the mountain as the seasons begin to change. In the winter, there is snow and ice. Harsh winds, freezing rains sweep over the mountain passes. The mountain remains still underneath. Spring comes and the snows melt. Grasses and flowers cover the hillside. Flowers sprout and bloom. The mountain remains solid and supportive. In the summer, the mountain holds life and growth. Basked in sunlight and unchallenged by the clouds and sun. The colors change again with the arrival of autumn, but underneath, the mountain remains steadfast and unchanged, grounded in the earth. See the mountain over the course of one day, beginning with the pink hues of dawn, followed by the clear, bright morning. Then comes the deep golden light and shadows of the afternoon. Watch the rich red and orange sunset give way to the darkness of night. And then finally, the blue-black silhouette of the mountain is visible against the starry night sky. Throughout all this, the mountain remains unchanging, strong and steady, impervious to the buffeting winds and heavy snows. See if you can sit like the mountain, solid and grounded despite the weather, despite time, despite the changing seasons. The mountain accepts change. It does not resist it. It does not resist. Feel yourself present now, deeply rooted, centered, and still. Just like the mountain is unmoved by storms, winds, cold, rain and heat, you are unmoved by the weather of life. Just breathe that in. You are unmoved by the weather of life. And now come back. Wiggle your toes deep in the earth. And see if you can take this quality of groundedness into your day with you. Allow life to unfold around you as you remain grounded and steadfast, remembering the mountain.
Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion to.
Thank you, Ireland and Terry. That was wonderful. So I've been hearing for almost 20 years of the powerful effect of standing up here and seeing all the people and hearing, and it's true. There's a wonderful effect that comes through this room and this power of this group. Thank you. So as I said, I've been coming here for over 20 years now, and I thought it was time to tell a little bit of my story. I realized recently that most people here recognize me and know me, but really don't know much about me, and you may not learn much today, but a lot of it I'm still keeping secret. And it's sometimes better off that way. So I ended up in Washington in 1992, after traveling around quite a bit. I was born in California and very quickly moved to Connecticut, and our family moved a lot. We lived in Michigan. I had to even write this down, because you know when you get up here, something happens to the brain. I think it gets a big hole in it, and things just go away. So I wrote these things down. We lived in Michigan, Indiana, Kentucky. Then we lived 17 years in Illinois. And I also lived in Florida, Hawaii, and Midway Island before coming to Washington. And throughout all that time, I was a very troubled person. Didn't know why. I needed help, but I didn't know what. I didn't know who to ask, and I didn't know where to go. When I was in eighth grade, I was introduced to a fundamentalist Christian church, and they assured me they had the right idea and the right message, and so I accepted that as my goal of being a fundamentalist Christian. And that lasted until I got away to college and couldn't get off to that fundamentalist church, and there were other people around in the dorm drinking and smoking pot, and it seemed rather interesting, so that became a new focus for a few years. What I discovered during that time was that the fundamentalists that I was with seemed rather judgmental, and the hippies I was hanging around with were more into peace and love, and that was what I wanted, and that's where I went. Until that didn't work for me anymore. It seemed the path of drinking and carrying on was fun for a time, and then it just became too painful. My husband was sent to treatment for overeating, believe it or not, while he was in the Navy, and the first thing they did was introduce him to the 12-step program. And I had no idea what that was about. And he was interested in sharing it with me, and he introduced me to some material and suggested I read these information in a certain order and to keep an open mind. And just those words right there changed my life, to keep an open mind with that material, to read it, and because he knew it was going to trigger me, because it mentioned God, but I read it, and something changed. The next day, I attended an Overeaters Anonymous meeting, and when someone read the little part of the introduction, they said, "Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, welcome home." I was home. That was giving me what I needed at the time. And I won't say that I got instantly sober, and my life became instantly perfect. No. There were still a lot of unresolved problems that needed to be worked out. So when we came to Washington, I continued with the 12-step program, and after I'd been there a little while, I was in a meeting, and a lady walked in, and I saw her, and I about jumped out of my chair. I thought, oh my goodness, there's my friend. I don't know who she is. And her name was Rolanda, and we had never met. And yet I knew her. My heart sang every time she went into the room. So she was about my mother's age, a little older, and we became friends, and when she traveled, we kept in touch. And in the summer of 1997, she told me there was going to be a Louise Hay You Can Heal Your Life class at the Unity Church. And the way she said it, the class is being held at the church, as 12-step meetings are held at a church. They rent space. So that was the idea I had. Like, okay, I think I might try that. So we went, and I sat by the door so I could get out of there if it got a little too Christian-y. But they didn't. At the time, there was a youth minister here named Tony Roebuck, and he conducted the class. And some of you may have been there. I don't, Dorothy, yeah. Some of you were there. I remember Walter was there and several others. And this just did something for me. So when we were still in San Diego, at the first Overeaters Anonymous meeting I was at, there was a lady who frequently used the phrase, "There is only love and fear." And it was said frequently around those meetings, "There's only love and fear." So I associated that expression with the 12-step groups until I did a little research and realized that's not a 12-step expression, and I found out where it is from. It's from A Course in Miracles. So after I started coming here very reluctantly, I took the Louise Hay You Can Heal Your Life class, and it did. I can honestly say it did heal my life, yes. So I heard that I liked this group. We were meeting at the old church then. I liked the people, and I liked the message. Then I heard that they were going to be having another class when this one was over, on the 4T prosperity class, tithing of your time, talent, and treasure. And I said, wow, I would like to be more prosperous. So I took it. And if you've taken it, if you're familiar with it, it's a lot to take. It's a lot to swallow all at once. And I took it, and I cooperated with it. I had an open mind, and yet I was also very resistant. But I followed the instructions to the degree that I could, and the results were astounding. Astounding. And so one of the things we often did was to think of something that we wanted as our goal to achieve. And I did that, and I received it, you know, in physical terms. And yet, I'm still looking for something. I still needed something. And what I realized what I needed was peace. That I was setting my goals for external things when what I really wanted was peace. And that's what I've been focusing on, was bringing about peace in my life rather than material things. So last April, I was reading a little handout from A Course in Miracles, and I ran across an article that I thought was very helpful, and that is what I would like to share with you today. This was originally written by Beverly Hutchison McNeff, and I'd like to give her credit for writing most of this, and then part of it is mine too. So this is dealing with Lesson 124 from A Course in Miracles. And the Course spends a great deal of time telling us about the value of happiness. The Course rarely talks about how the separation from our oneness and God occurred, other than to say the impossible could never really have happened. So this was an eye-opening moment for me when I attended Course and started really understanding what it was saying, was that we had never left heaven. We are still in heaven. We are still one with God, and we have never been separated from God. And the reason we think we are so unhappy is that we think we're separate from God. There is one place in the Course where we read, "Into eternity, where all is one, there crept a tiny mad idea at which the Son of God remembered not to laugh, and we are all the Son of God." At that moment, we lost our joy and forgot we had a choice as to how we would react to the insanity of the suffering we see around us, and we forgot our reality in God. All is not lost, though. We are told in the Manual for Teachers that the world will end in laughter, for its purpose will be seen. Our happiness will again be valued. There are so many places in A Course in Miracles where we see the great value of happiness, such as when it says, "Then realize that your part is to be happy. Only this is asked of you or anyone who wants to take his place among God's messengers." In another section, we are told, "In lightness and in laughter is sin gone, because its quaint absurdity is seen." So one of the things I like about the Course is that it uses different definitions for words we commonly have in our usage, such as sin. Sin is simply error or missing the mark. So it doesn't take much to begin to see that from the Course's perspective, the seriousness we have ascribed to the world is the real block to our salvation. We want to blame our circumstances, our job, money, possessions, family, health, society, and, well, if that's not enough to blame, then we'll start blaming politics or the myriad of others that we have endowed with the power, what seem like magical powers, powers that seem to be out of our control, but what we believe are responsible for making us happy or not. Most people who know me think I'm a pretty happy person, I like to think, and that perception has occasionally led to, maybe they think I'm not a very deep thinker or serious, and okay, well, fortunately, the Course tells us that our function is happiness, and forgiveness is the key to happiness. And it also, a happy person is one who has realized the value of forgiveness and has done the work of allowing their grievances to be healed. I don't see much in the Course about being serious or a deep thinker, and as a matter of fact, the Course seems to tell us that all our thinking and analyzing is what is keeping us locked into the lies of the ego and a future that will forever be chained to our past. The Course is actually counseling us at times to just let it all go. We cannot understand anything from our current perspective. When we are focused on what we focus on with our bodies, we will never see the spiritual. And when we are focused on the spiritual, we will not see the physical. So we can't understand anything from our current perspective. And so we need to open our minds and hearts to a truth that is in us, but not of us or of this world. This is antithetical to the world's way of thinking, but it is the start of miracle-mindedness that the Course defines as the decision to heal the separation by letting it go. So lesson 124 in A Course in Miracles says, "Let me remember I am one with God." This is a very powerful lesson. It is a lesson of gratitude for our identity in God that cannot be lost, but it can be ignored. And even when it is ignored, though, the power of this awareness quietly waits for us to return. Even when it is ignored, though, the power of this awareness quietly waits, and it is not diminished by our diminishing thoughts. And when we turn to it, we are given the strength to face whatever the world puts forth. The Bible gives us the Ten Commandments, which we can choose to live by or not. And lesson 124 gives us three commitments to practice so we might begin to access God's power in our lives. The first is no doubt. As it says, "Today we will not doubt God's love for us, nor question his protection and his care." And the second was no fear. No meaningless anxieties can come between our faith and our awareness of God's presence. And the third, no separation. We are one with God today in recognition and remembrance. We feel him in our hearts. Our minds contain his thoughts. Our eyes behold his loveliness in all we look upon. Today we see only the loving and the lovable. And this lesson goes on to tell us the benefit of living a life in which these three commitments are embraced. It says that when our focus is to see only the loving and the lovable, appearances of pain give way to peace. The frantic, sad, distressed, lonely, and afraid are restored to tranquility and peace of mind in which they were created, and the dying and the dead are restored to life. Wow. All this we see because we saw it first within ourselves. We are told in the Course that the thoughts we hold within our minds are very powerful and transformative for us and the world. It says, no miracle can ever be denied to those who know that they are one with God. A miracle is defined as a shift in perception from fear to love. No thought of theirs but has the power to heal all forms of suffering in anyone. So for us, this transformation takes practice. We are always building new neuropathways, if you will. So one of the things I did, I was in the Navy. And the Navy was always into training. And one of the most fun training I did in the Navy was forklift school. Believe it or not, it's not just a turn it on to, you know, I was trained to load explosives on explosive ships. So you had to be very careful. They wanted it all done precisely. So the part of the training, we had a huge field with pallets on it, and we had to drive the forklift through a flower-shaped pattern through that, and very precisely and very quickly. So the instructor showed us how to use the forklifts, and as we went, we were allowed to go as slow as we wanted, but when the wheel reached a certain position, we made the turn, and we had lots of time to practice, and he would be right there giving us instructions. And he was really good. I have never had an instructor who had it down as well as he did. So we would be to a place, and he'd crank it to the left, crank it to the right, crank, you know, and then he'd say, bring it home. And so there were 12 of us in the class. All of us thought this was way beyond our skill. So we did this flower-shaped pattern, forward and backwards, very quickly, and all of us passed because we developed the neural pathway correctly at the time. And it's similar to learning music. You learn it correctly the first time, and then it's there, and you don't have to keep going back. Well, things turned out differently for us. We learned things growing up, and now we're just in the process of relearning. Where did I go with this? It's just amazing how my brains just go away up here. Okay, so we got our turns, like your tempo, we get this correct, and even if we had to slow down at first, I thought that was wonderful. We could go slow, but learn it correctly. So in any learning situation, the way you start to learn the task becomes the neural pathway in the mind, so you don't want to learn your process or your music, notes or tempos or turns incorrectly at that critical time, or it will be harder to relearn it later. It is not impossible, it's harder. That much is the same with us too. We have developed a lot of neural pathways based on the ego's way of thinking, which has brought us much pain and sadness. But we can begin again, and that's what the miracle does. It gives us a new start. So if you're like me, I get a little confounded with computers. And yeah. So when we first switched to Apple products, it was difficult, but I eventually took the class at the Apple store, and 9 times out of 10, I'd go in and I said, well, when was the last time you restarted your computer? I don't know. So we'd do it, and like I said, 9 times out of 10, it took care of it. So sometimes a computer just needs to restart. Computer needs to restart, and so do we. We just need to start again. And the Course's daily practice is offering us a compassionate and helpful reset for our minds. If we can see the benefit of embracing this practice, then maybe we won't sit there in our sorrow saying it's impossible or it's hard. Instead, we can find that it is possible because it is not we, but the Christ within that does the work. So these three commitments are worth the effort because they are the truth and cannot fail to bring our lives a sense of joy, contentment, and purpose that the world will never supply. They simply are the truth, and there is nothing opposite to the truth. With this in mind, time spent on these commitments is time well spent. So let's spend some now. So the first, no doubt. The Course spends a great deal of time telling us how much God loves us and cares for us, not because it's trying to convince us of this, but because it simply is the truth. There is never a time when we are not protected, cared for, and loved by God. This is the type of conviction we need to practice now until it becomes the neural pathway in our minds and the natural pathway in our hearts. Remember the cartoon Felix the Cat? Does anybody remember Felix? Felix the Cat? Okay, so if you're old enough to remember the theme song to Felix the Cat, whenever he gets in a fix, he reaches into his bag of tricks. And in that magical bag, Felix would find the answer to any problem. No matter how big or complex the problem, Felix could reach into that little bag of tricks he carried around with him everywhere and pull out a ladder, an airplane. There was no limit to the answers in that bag. And this is the way we need to go to God with our problems, realizing that there is no limit to God's answers for us. Think of it the way the Course invites us to make its thoughts part of our problem-solving repertoire that we turn to whenever we get into a fix. Turning to God, to a power greater than ourselves for help, we are immediately answered. That is the definition of a miracle, a shift from the limited thinking of fear to the limitless awareness of love. Today, I will not doubt his love for us, nor question his protection and his care. And now the second one, no fear. Fear is insidious. It can grip us for no reason and for plenty of seemingly good reasons. It can grip us personally and our culture and our country. The Course says that the opposite of love is fear, not hate. Fear. Fear is the block to the awareness of God's care and love for us. It needs to be clearly looked at and found wanting. So there's a book, Proof of Heaven. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but it sounds very intriguing. And in that book, a man has a near-death experience and comes back from his encounter with these three basic truths, and they are, you are loved and cherished dearly and forever. You have nothing to fear. There is nothing you can do wrong. This sounds so similar to the message from A Course in Miracles. We are told not to doubt God's love, protection, and care for us. It is eternal. We are told not to allow our fears to come between our awareness of his constant presence. And we are told we are his beloved child in whom he is well pleased. I visualize how my life would be if I embraced these three statements. Let me say these to you quietly. You are loved and cherished, dearly and forever. You have nothing to fear. There is nothing you can do wrong. Isn't that sweet? So how about A Course's thought that we are God's children in whom he is well pleased? Wouldn't life take on a more peaceful, relaxed, and happy perspective because the great weight of fear and guilt would be lifted? No meaningless anxieties can come between our faith and awareness of God's presence. And the third, no separation. What does no separation really mean? This quote from Lesson 124 gives us some context. You are one with God today. In recognition and remembrance, we feel God in our hearts. Our minds contain his thoughts. Our eyes behold his loveliness in all we look upon. Today we see only the loving and the lovable. This idea counsels us to have a focus on our oneness with God, to realize that our minds can only contain the thoughts of God, since we are his creation. When we dwell in fear or judgment, we are simply not thinking. We sort of check out. So have you ever done that? You ever just kind of checked out, driving along? Oh, I just missed my exit. Just, you know, you just, who, where were you? So when you bring yourself back, you've really done nothing wrong. You've done nothing. You've just done nothing. So hence the idea of a focus on no separation would be one where we continually bring our attention back to the truth. When we find ourselves attracted by fearful and judgmental ideas, what I call nothing thinking, we are quicker to identify them and choose again with the help of the Holy Spirit. The above quote also addresses another concept that is illustrated in the biblical passage where Jesus says, "The greatest commandment is to love God above all else. And the second commandment is like the first, to love your brother as yourself." When we look for the loving and the lovable in each other and all we look upon, we have the experience of healing the separation. That is how we know we are one with God and how we feel him in our hearts. With all that is going on in the world, and of course in our lives too, it seems almost impossible at times to have this kind of focus. There seems to be an endless string of irritations and problems always coming about. But the Course assures us, though, that peace is possible here. It is simply a matter of motivation and perhaps physics. Physics. Albert Einstein said, "Everything is energy." And that is all there is to it. Match the frequency of the reality you want, and you cannot help but get that reality. It can be no other way. This is not philosophy. This is physics. From Albert. Thank you, Albert. At first, this quote seems somewhat magical from the Course's perspective. Magical thinking in the Course is trying to solve a problem on the level where it is not. So magical thinking would be we have a spiritual problem trying to solve it through physical means. So if we want abundance, for example, we might think that it's about focusing on the acquisition of things or hanging around financially successful people. And in one way, the universe is abundant and will match what you think you want. But as the Course is quick to remind us, we don't really know what we want. The most healing focus for us to have, therefore, is one that feeds our deepest need for peace, healing, and happiness. If we are at peace, we will experience prosperity no matter what we have or where we find ourselves. This is so true. If healing is our goal, we will be extending that by our mere presence, and by doing so, we cannot help but reap the benefits. If happiness is our goal, we will naturally forgive, since forgiveness is the key to happiness, and in so doing, open our awareness to the abundance of God that is in every encounter. So these three commitments, no doubt, no fear, no separation, give us a focus that the universe will not only match, but will transform into a heaven on earth. Happiness is so much more than a smile, although a smile is very powerful. Happiness embodies the practice of faith, love, and unity as well. And this is the audaciousness of it. You have to be pretty brave to live without doubt, without fear, and recognizing your oneness with God. But we are not unsupported in this practice. as we read in the epilogue of the workbook, the end is certain and the means as well. You will be told exactly what God wills for you each time there is a choice to make. And so we walk with him from this time on and turn to him for guidance and for peace in sure direction. Joy attends our way, for we go homeward to an open door which God has held unclosed to welcome us. Peace be with you. Thank you.